You're listening to the Sunrise Community Church Podcast with Pastor Adam Powers. At Sunrise, we desire that the glory of God would be the glory of this city. If you would like more information about our church, please visit our website at sunrisecc.com. Let's join Pastor Adam for this week's message.
Well, who here really enjoys a mess? No hands. No one likes a mess. Messes are not fun. The reason I begin with this question today is because we open up our Bibles and come into Genesis 26, 7, and 8. Believe it or not, that's the text in view today. We come to a large mess that more resembles something of a Russian novel. Do you guys get this? I heard that this past week, and it really made sense with me. Western novels, it's very clear, the boundary lines, who the good guys and the bad guys are. If you open up a Russian novel, anything by Tolstoy or Anna Karenina, what, that's perhaps an example right there. It's never quite sure, the reader, you're never quite sure who is what. Who's the bad guy, who's the bad, or the good guy? Why is it that everybody seems like they're the bad guy and the mess just gets worse and the whole point of the book is just to look at the mess and say, that's a mess? Such is our chapter today. Such is life, which we will see today. Everywhere we turn in our text today, we see someone sinning. Isaac, Rebecca, Jacob, and Esau. All in all, this is one messed up family, and a lot of what happens in this particular moment with this family leaves us with uncertainty even about how to feel about these people. And yet, God still, in His promises, uses them for His glory, and we almost don't want Him to as we look at these moments. But while there is loads of mess to see, the title of the sermon still, I think, stands. Mercy is so present here, and so perhaps we could put it like this. Today we will receive precious instruction from such a perilous moment. It's a long text. Today I am going to read, for the sake of it being the text on one hand, and for the sake of us following the drama and tension of the story on the other, every single verse of it today, and so that alone takes about 15 to 20 minutes. The bulk of our text is going to be in chapter 27, though we'll begin briefly in chapter 26 at the end of it, and we'll end briefly at the beginning of chapter 28. There's bookends to see here with marriages and Esau. So without further ado, the first heading we come to is a bitter beginning. This is Genesis 26, 34 and 35. When Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, not Elon Musk, Elon the Hittite. I did that, sorry, that just came in. And they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. As our passage begins, we see marriages in view, specifically the marriages of Esau to certain Hittites. That's 34, but then verse 35, we learn that because of these marriages, a bitterness arose with the in-laws. We're not told specifically the source of the bitterness. Perhaps it was these women and their Hittite ways, their pagan ways that so vex the soul of the in-laws. Perhaps they just didn't get along, or perhaps they were just downright rude to Isaac and Rebekah. I don't think the source of bitterness really lies in them. I would submit to you that the source of bitterness present in verse 35 lies in Esau himself. Because Esau likely would have known the lengths grandfather for him, Abraham, went to ensure that his dad Isaac, right? So grandfather Abraham went to certain lengths to ensure that his father Isaac didn't marry these women. And yet here he is ever so eager to go outside the bounds of God's people to find a wife. And many of them, and so this is problematic not only because there is polygamy here, but it's problematic because Esau, I think, was the source of the bitterness of how eager he was to go outside the boundaries that God has set. So as we enter into our passage today, we already have before us family mess with Esau and his parents. Now we enter into the main bulk of the text. This is our second heading, the biggest heading today, a stolen blessing. This is chapter 27, verse 1 to 46. I'm not going to read all that at the same time. It's a large section, so let's take it really dialogue by dialogue, one piece at a time. First, the first four verses, Isaac's request. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me. And prepare for me delicious food, such as I love. And bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." So we've arrived at the main drama of the text today, and as we do, we see in verse 1, Isaac is described as old and blind. Curious. He will live another 80 years. Do any of you wake up like this and just, it's so painful. This is 40s. Welcome to 40s. I'm now in it. You injure yourself at night and you wake up with pains you didn't have the night before, and you're just, some of you, even older, you just wake up, I don't know when I'm going to die. It surely can't be much longer with how I'm feeling. Well, this is Isaac. He's so old and so blind that he calls in Esau, his oldest son, makes a request for food and says, "I want to bless you before I die," which might be any moment now. Now, all this might seem above par, like a normal request from father and son, but there is so much more at work that is underhanded to see. Most prominent to see here is Isaac's desire to bless only Esau before he dies. See, in this culture, it was the norm. When you're nearing death and you're the father, you're the head of the household, you bring in all the sons and you give them blessings individually, and you save the biggest blessing for the oldest son. That was the norm. Now, though, Isaac, as he thinks he's nearing death and he's getting old and blind, he decides only Esau is coming in. Why is this the case? Well, it's because Esau makes good stew. Sure, he really seems to like the stew. That phrase in verse 4, did you see it? "Come make me food, the stew, as such my soul loves." This is like an emotional bond with this delicacy. He is far too invested in this food. Now, I'm all in for good food, certainly, but this is beyond that. It's as if Isaac, he's not driven really by faith. He's driven by appetite. He's driven by food, by a sensuousness about him. And who knew that stew would play such a prominent role in the history of the covenant family of God? A few chapters before this, we saw it was stew that was present that defrauded Esau from his birthright. And now we see it's stew that Isaac seems now to favor Esau over Jacob. Now, Isaac should have brought, like we said, both sons in to receive their blessings, but he doesn't. And we wonder why. I mean, sure, we laugh about, okay, it's just food, but certainly we just learned that Isaac was vexed in soul over Esau's marriages. Has he forgotten this? More so, didn't Isaac remember chapter 25, verse 23? The war within the womb of Rebekah. Two nations are in you, and they're at war. The older, Esau, will serve the younger, Jacob. Why then favor Esau? Why is Isaac now going against what seems to be God's direct revealed intention by seeking to bless Esau and not bless Jacob before he dies? I think the only conclusion we can arrive at here is that Isaac is blind in more ways than one. Physically, yes. He's very dim and he can't see. We'll see this humorously in a minute. You think, really, he's going to fall for that disguise, that Halloween costume that Rebecca's going to put on him soon? But spiritually, Isaac seems just as unable to see as he is physically. That leads us into the next dialogue. This is verse 5 to 17, Rebecca's deception. Now Rebecca was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebecca said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, saying, 'Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me 2 good young goats.'" That's a lot of meat, notice. "That I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves." Again, Isaac, driven by appetite. "And you shall bring it to your father to eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself and not a blessing." His mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go. Bring them to me." So Jacob went and took them and brought them to his mother, and his mother prepared delicious food, again, such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her older son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And the skins of the young goats she put on his hands and the smooth part of his neck. And she put the delicious food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. Apparently, Rebecca, right, the walls of a tent are not very thick. You can hear things said in just the other compartment. She was not far away when Isaac was talking with Esau about his death, the food, and the blessing. So she knows what we, as the reader, know. Jacob should not only have been in there too, being in discussion with Dad about getting the blessing before he dies, but Jacob is the one who should be getting this blessing. The older shall serve the younger. Why is Isaac trying to go against God's will? The war in her womb was there. Jacob the younger should be over Esau the older. Favoritism really makes its ugly face appear in verse 5 and 6. I wonder if you even noticed as we read it. There in verse 5 and 6, Esau is called his son. Jacob is called her son. And so Rebekah plans to ensure that her son, Jacob, gets what he should from God, as if God needs her deceptive help to bring about his promises. She makes a plan. And the plan is quite simple, really. She will make the meal that Isaac so longs for. Jacob will bring it into him, and Rebekah will dress Jacob so he looks the part. Hairy animal skins and all, so that he will receive the blessing. Observe a few things in this. Look at Rebecca here. What is she doing? Goodness gracious, the manipulation is intense. Why is she doing this? Is this just because she favors Jacob over Esau? I mean, perhaps. That's probably a large part of it, but I think that another large part of it could be anger. It's anger because she heard, notice in the text when she refers to Isaac, it will always be your father, not my husband. And when that happens in our home, it's not a good thing, generally. Like, that's your son. You need to go deal with your son, not our son. She heard Isaac seeking to go outside God's boundaries and bless Esau and not bless Jacob at all. For mom, Rebecca is going to be greatly angered in this. And so in her anger, she thinks up a plan to dupe Isaac into doing what he should have done all along. Really then, I think Isaac's previous bad choice with the sensuous appetite-driven blessing leads to Rebecca's bad choice, deceiving Isaac to bring about the true blessing. But also look at Jacob. In verse 11, when he comes in, he doesn't seem to be all that concerned about the morality of this plan. You want me to lie and trick not just Dad, but Esau too, and deceive them in this way? Do you remember what happened with the birthright? How angry he got? You want to do this again? He doesn't seem concerned about that at all. He just seems concerned about getting found out. I'm not hairy. I'm smooth-skinned. I'm not like my brother. But mom knows best, right? That's clearly what's going on here. She'll dress him up. She'll put the Halloween costume on. Esau's not only best clothes that smell like him, but goat skins on his hands and his neck. I mean, quick comment, that's awfully hairy. That's kind of disgusting, honestly. But could this really have duped Isaac? I mean, such a feeble disguise. Well, maybe it really would have. We've already seen him as dull in multiple senses. Maybe here we just add another sense into the mix. Not only can he not see, not only is he driven by what he can taste, not only is his spiritual sense dull, but now we might even be seeing that his sense of touch is leaving him as well. All in all, the whole person of Isaac seems to be diminishing and growing very impoverished in his abilities to do much of anything at all. One commentator noted that and then said this: Isaac here is as much to be pitied as he is to be blamed for this episode. Both those are true at the same time. Lastly, observe verse 13, how ominous it is. Jacob expresses worries that he's going to be found out and then cursed, not blessed. And Rebecca says, no, let the curse be on me. It's okay. It'll be on me, not on you. But we want to say, really? That's not quite how these things work. I mean, if Jacob goes in there, you're not in there, he's dressed up like this, and Isaac finds out and he starts cursing Jacob, Jacob is going to be the one who's cursed, not Rebecca. Though her heart really comes through in this for her favored son, but it shows us much about her that she really is not going to bear a curse from Isaac, but she will have to bear more than probably she can imagine after this moment. After this whole chapter plays out, spoiler alert, Jacob does dupe Isaac. He gets the blessing and then has to be sent away for safety. She has to be the one to send Jacob away, and she thinks it's only going to be for a few days. This is her prized boy. She never sees him again in life. And when she dies in chapter 35, her death's not even mentioned. her maidservant, her nurse, Deborah. Her death is mentioned in place of Rebecca. And then Rebecca just gets a nod at the end in Genesis 49, saying that she was buried in the cave of Machpelah with the rest of the family. The curse that Rebecca will end up bearing is distance from her beloved son and, really, silence for the rest of the book of Genesis. It's a heavy curse to bear. Which brings us to the next dialogue. This is now, he's going to go in, Jacob's deception, verse 18 to 29. So he, Jacob, went into his father and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you found it so quickly, my son?" He answered, "Because the Lord your God granted me success." Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not." So Jacob went near to Isaac his father, who felt him, and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him, because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. He said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He answered, "I am." Then he said, "Bring it near to me that I may eat of my son's game and bless you." So he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. And then his father Isaac said to him, again, "Come near and kiss me, my son." So he came near and kissed him, and Isaac smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, "See, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine." Those are symbolic, metaphorical images for great blessing. "Let peoples serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you." Goodness, goodness, goodness. The drama and tension of the moment rises as we see Jacob walk in and carry out Rebekah's plan. Will he be discovered or will he not? We rightly are appalled as this scene begins, as Isaac says, "How did you get it so quickly?" And he blasphemes God's name and uses the Lord's name to his own advantage, and not for praise or adoration or worship or reflection or meditation, but for his own dubious ends. "God gave me quick success." And then there are a few moments where we think he's about to be caught by Isaac. Three times Isaac will say, "Come near, come near, come near." Verse 21, verse 25, and verse 26. He checks and rechecks who this really is. But Isaac proves to be, in this moment, as dull-witted as we've seen him to be in the chapter so far. But notice what's not dull. Another sense now comes into view: the nose of Isaac. He smells the clothes of Esau, and what do they smell like? The fields of the Lord that the Lord has blessed, meaning it smells like food. This guy is really driven by appetites. And then he blesses Jacob with the blessing that he wanted to give to Esau, that God intended Jacob to receive. And the blessing really echoes so much of what we've seen before. It's slam-packed with Abrahamic language, once again indicating to us as readers that the promises originally made to Abraham that carried on to Isaac are now going to be passed to Jacob. And so really, I think for the first time in the Bible, in these 26 verses, we have something of the phrase coming to mind: the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, now starts to come into reality. But it's at this point in the narrative that we start to become so mixed about so much. We are probably glad to see that the younger son now has received the blessing that God wanted him to have all along. The older shall serve the younger. Esau shall serve Jacob. He's the one that needs to have the Abrahamic covenantal promises passed to him. And that's happened, yes. But my, oh my, we hate the way it came about, don't we? We're like, how could God validate something like this through such deceit and manipulation? Of course we're right to feel like that. Now hold that in your heads, hearts. More on that in a minute. For now, the next dialogue in the text, we turn back to Esau. Verse 30 to 41, Esau's bitterness. As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, Esau's brother came in from his hunting. He also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me." His father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" He answered, "I am your son, your firstborn Esau." Then Isaac trembled very violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me, and I ate it all before you came, and I have blessed him?" "Yes, and he shall be blessed." As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing." Esau said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now behold, he has taken away my blessing." Then he said, "Have you not still though reserved a blessing for me?" Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Behold, I have made him lord over you, and all his brothers I have given to him for servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck." Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." You notice how the section began in verse 30? Scarcely as soon as Jacob left, Esau comes in. It's like they went out of different doors in the tent, like at the exact same moment. And Isaac, who had just eaten his fill of two young goats, the picture I got in my mind is the old man, like boiler belly, that he's full. At this point, it takes years to develop such a boiler. This is what Isaac's got. As soon as Esau speaks and Isaac finds out that this is really Esau now this time, he trembles violently. And after hearing how greatly Jacob will be blessed, Esau then has his own violent outburst. He screams out bitterly. These two then go back and forth in a very emotional dialogue where Esau is begging for another blessing while Isaac says Jacob has stolen his blessing and nothing really can now change that. And so Esau, after he hears all this in verse 38, he weeps. Yet Isaac interrupts his weeping by giving him a kind of blessing that really sounds like a curse, doesn't it? God, remember, will give to Jacob the dew of heaven, the fatness of the earth. Greatly blessed Jacob will be. Esau will have the reverse. He will dwell away from the dew of heaven, away from the fatness of the earth. That's verse 39 and 40. And we also hear that though Esau and his descendants will live and die by the sword, eventually, when he grows too weary of his brother's hold on him, Esau will break the yoke from off of him. And so perhaps we're already anticipating a future interaction between these two brothers where lots of violent things will happen. And then, that of course is prefaced by verse 41. Esau, it says in his heart, he says secretly to himself, he makes a plan of his own, just like Rebekah formerly did. Isaac, my father, will die, and I will enter into days of mourning. He thinks it's sooner than later, right? Because Isaac feels like he's about to die. Unless God stops this from happening, Esau plans within his heart to be a second kind of Cain, who will kill his brother out of pure hatred, whose blood will cry out from the ground. The next dialogue then comes, Rebekah's warning, verse 42 to 45. But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah, so she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him." Has he forgotten the birthright episode? No. Will he forget this moment? No. "Then I will send and bring you back from there. Why should I be bereft of both of you in one day?" Well, here we learn that Esau's plan to kill Jacob was known, heard by Rebekah. Perhaps in her manipulation, she has grown sensitive to knowing the hearts of those around her. And so she comes to knowledge about Esau's plans somehow, and she warns Jacob, naturally, her beloved son, and said, "Go to my brother's house until your brother Esau's fury turns away. And when that happens, don't worry, I'll send for you and you'll be back soon. Why should I lose both of you in the same day?" Well, we know how this ends. This leads to then the last dialogue. Notice it's verse 45 in chapter 27, all the way to verse 5 in chapter 28. "Then Rebekah said to Isaac," wow, they're actually talking to each other now. We haven't seen that so far. "I loathe my life because of the Hittite women," right? We've already seen that in the beginning passage. "If Jacob," different son, "marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me?" Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and directed him, "You must not take a wife from the Canaanite women. Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take as your wife from there one of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he give you the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham." Thus Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Paddan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob's and Esau's mother. Well, Rebekah shows her quick wit and her understanding of the situation at hand and goes to Isaac, her husband, to manipulate him. Now, so that Jacob is kept safe by being sent away. But she knows it can't be my choice to send him away. I'm not the head of the home, but I can sure manipulate my husband to get him to do what I want to do. And so she does that, and that's what Jacob does. But notice how she does it. She repeats the initial concern we saw in chapter 26 today, verse 34 and 35, about the bitterness that they both have experienced from Esau marrying Hittite women. And then she says, life would be even worse if Jacob were to do the same. And that's all we hear her saying. Isaac, knowing Rebecca these many years, knowing her heart, knowing her tendency perhaps to try through aggression to manipulate him, reads between the lines and understands what she's really saying. Send away the son that I love so he doesn't end up like the son that you love. This marriage is not well, clearly. But then Jacob gets sent off by Isaac to find a wife from the daughters of Laban. And then his parting words to Jacob re-emphasizes not only the blessing he's already been given by Isaac, but all the Abrahamic covenantal language, even back to Adam in Genesis 1:28, with being fruitful and multiplying on the face of the ground. All of that is now housed, those promises, in Jacob, the new patriarch to come. Well, that's the main bulk of our text. We'll tease out some things in a minute, but before, see how it ends. There are bookends. We saw earlier Esau's former marriages to Hittites. Now we end in a confused ending. That's the third and final heading in chapter 28, verse 6 to 9, with more marriages from Esau. Now Esau saw, that's hard to say, that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Paddan Aram, to take a wife from there, and that as he blessed him, he directed him, you must not take a wife from the Canaanite women. And that Jacob obeyed his father and mother and gone to Paddan Aram. So when Esau saw that the Canaanite women did not please, notice not Rebekah, but Isaac, his father, Esau went to who? To his father's family, to Ishmael, and took as his wife, besides the wives he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth. Well, our passage ends the way it began. Marriages are in view, specifically now, Esau not marrying outside the family line, but inside. Inside the family line. And this is tragic to witness. It's a man who's still a boy, who's craving his father's favor. He sees, he hears. Esau saw Jacob get commanded to go not marry Canaanite women, but women within the family lines, women within the promised seed, with our family. Go off and marry them. And then he saw Jacob obey and get blessed. And so what does Esau want to do? He wants dad's smile. So he goes off and marries one of dad's family to try to earn dad's favor. And once again, we see the echoes of favoritism. Jacob, notice, is sent off to find a wife from among his mother's family. Esau goes off to find a wife within his father's family because he doesn't want his mother's smile. He wants dad's. Well, there's the text. Here's two things. I'm only giving you two today to pull out from because we'd be here forever if we pulled more. Two things just to anchor down into as we kind of recover, reflect, and learn from the mess that we all just experienced. It's like a car wreck, right? You don't want to see, like bodies on the highway, but when everyone slows down to rubberneck, right? You do the exact same thing. You want to see, we want to see the carnage. We want to see the mess. Well, we've seen it. What can we learn from it? First, this is not how families should be. This is not how families should be. What we've just witnessed. If you've been sitting here today and watching this family and this chapter unfold, and you've recognized something about your own family or families you know of, this must be said. This is not how families should be. No one in this chapter does well. No one seems to be righteous. Isaac favoring Esau, Rebekah favoring Jacob, Jacob deceiving Isaac and Esau to get the blessing, and Esau responding by holding a grudge, harboring revenge, and plotting to kill his brother. But did you notice in the whole chapter, I mean, for everything we did see, do you notice what we never saw? It's always two of the family together talking and plotting and scheming and deceiving. We never saw them all together around the dinner table. We never saw the four of them together talking it out. They're always separate. They're always doing their own things in their own way, deceiving one another and staying apart from one another. And thus, this is the most, perhaps, unhealthy pattern for a family to live in. You got to wonder, when did this begin? Right? I mean, a small thing, but perhaps you've even experienced in your own time. Like, when did we start eating in front of the TV so much that we now our dinner table is just kind of like the second laundry room? Like, when did this begin? Like, what happened here? Let's go back away from the screens and let's talk and sit together. When did this pattern begin? It was just a few chapters ago in chapter 24 when we saw literally the marriage made in heaven as a servant of Abraham goes off to find a wife for Isaac. And then there's that heavenly scene at the end where it's in the wilderness and Isaac is meditating and worshiping the Lord and he looks up and there's Rebekah. And yet this is them. If you think this will never happen to you, you're paving the road for this to happen to you. Any people put in the exact right surroundings are capable of anything. This is a family that started well, that is not finishing well. There's so many warnings here. Parents, this is why you should never show favoritism to your kids. I mean, that's simple. Perhaps you gravitate toward one. One's the athlete. One's the genius. And maybe something else. One's the chef. Isaac certainly liked that about Esau, right? So they gravitated toward one. One's a man's man. One's a smooth-skinned, domesticated boy. So, of course, the mom's going to like that one, while the man likes the hunter. I mean, it's so funny because this is stuff of real life. Favoritism is a good way to get your kids to kill each other. Literally. Children, don't kill your siblings. And don't seek to cheat them out of all that's good for them in life. Husbands, talk to your wives. Don't retreat and just live by every ache of the belly in front of the TV or your phone. Talk to your wives. Do life with them. Don't retreat and grow super passive so you come to be dominated by her manipulation. And wives, don't seek to dominate your husbands. Don't seek to manipulate. All sons of Adam are prone to passivity. All daughters of Eve are prone to dominate. Such is the case with marriage. If you recognize yourself in this family, if you've been part of this family, if you are part of this family now, learn a better way. Love each other as Christ has loved you. And don't treat each other as your sins deserve. This family should not be like this. Our families should not be like this. But that leads to then the second thing that we'll tease out. We are like this. All of us are like this, yet God still works. This family is, yes, a complete mess, but God is still working. Sin is bad, yes, but sin still serves the sovereign purposes of God. We see that clearly in this chapter. Sin serves the sovereign purposes of God. God's not up in heaven fretting or stress sweating about what's going on, about who's going to get the blessing, if it's going to be Jacob or Esau. Was I really right to say the older is going to serve the younger? Oh my gosh, I don't know. That's not God. God is God. He's greater than anything that we can imagine or even conceive. Sin serves his sovereign purposes. None of us are okay with the underhanded and deceitful behavior of anyone in this chapter. But in all of it, God's covenant and promises still stand. This would have been a great message of hope for the people of Israel, as they're the ones that this book was originally written to as they're in the wilderness wandering. Because you know who didn't let them pass through their land? Edom. You know who the descendants of Edom are from? Esau. Obadiah says a lot about this moment. There's your cue. Go to women's ministry where you're studying the book of Obadiah now. It fits right with where we're at in Genesis. But they would have been so encouraged in their wandering and in the wilderness that though they sin again and again and again and again, that their sin will never hinder, stop, block, frustrate, or put or cease any of God's promises. Ultimately, God's plans can never be undone by the sin of man. God will use what we mean for evil for good. And so in this chapter, we get a preview of how Genesis will end in Joseph. And that great verse in Genesis 50:20, where he looks at his brothers and says, "What you meant for evil, God meant for good." We see that here in this chapter as well. It would have been a message of hope for Israel, and it is a message of hope for the church about God bringing his kingdom to pass through all the individual expressions of the local church in its various locations, all the embassies of heaven that he has planted around the world. It's full of only these kind of people. That's us. We have no idea. When we come in this building, and when Christians come in these buildings week in and week out, when people come in, how much courage it takes for some to walk through these doors. We don't know what's going on in the lives of these people, but God does, and he brings them in to reach them for the gospel. and mess that they are, God brings them in, redeems them when they trust in Christ, and then by grace grows them slowly but steadily out of their corruption that will last until death or he comes back. God's kingdom on earth will not come about because of our faithfulness, our obedience. It will not be stopped because of our unfaithfulness or our disobedience. His kingdom will grow because of his sovereign grace. I mean, God used human deception as part of his plan so that Jacob would be the one to get the blessing. It seems an awfully lot like another moment where God would use the deception of Judas, the deception of the Jews, the deception of the Romans to land his son on the cross to suffer and die for the sins of all of his people. So, church, even though this is a chapter full of mess, there is so much mercy to glean. And even though we see in ourselves a ton of lingering mess, let's be thankful that God's mercies are new every morning. And from knowing that, we can endeavor to grow in grace every day.
Thank you for listening to the Sunrise Community Church Podcast. We pray you are blessed by the preaching of God's Word. If you would like more information about our church, please visit our website at sunrisecc.com. May the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, the love of God, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with you all.